All right, admit it. How did you get to work today? You probably hopped in some kind of motorized vehicle, right? And putted your way into work, or maybe you're on your way to an important meeting, or it could be a shopping excursion, or any number of things. And in 99.9% of the time, we will use an automobile or something somewhat akin to that, something with an internal combustion engine to get from one place to another. And that's pretty much the way our society has been based now, certainly since World War II and right before that with the expansion of our highway system and our streets and all of that in deference to the car, the automobile. But there are alternatives, and that's what we're going to talk about today on Perspectives. The Moving Tallahassee Cars Optional Plan, which is going to be going before the Tallahassee City Commission on the 22nd of this month, just a little bit from now, and we have some subject matter experts on that. And you are subject matter experts, too, when it comes to your opinion. We want to hear from you at 414-1234-800-926-8809 or email us at perspectives@wfsu.org. I'm Tom Flanagan. Let's go around the table and meet our panel. We start off here on my left, your right, as you look at the radio. We have Gabe Menendez, who is the Director of Public Works for the City of Tallahassee, and he came equipped with a small laptop and all kinds of good stuff there, Gabe. Do you carry that around with you all the time?
Well, these tablets are really, really convenient. There's a way to keep a lot of information handy.
No, I'm glad you brought them here, and I'm glad you came in too. Tallahassee City Commissioner Mark Mustian joining us here. And, sir, it's good to see you. And we have an awful lot to talk about today when it comes to what the city is doing in regards to this and sort of from the top down. So we welcome you. Good to have you.
Thanks, Tom.
We have someone who really helped to mastermind this entire panel today, Cherie Bryant. She is with the Leon County, Tallahassee, or Tallahassee-Leon County, if you prefer, Planning Department. But Cherie, thank you.
Thank you.
And biking her way on in is Karen Lowen with Capital City Cyclists and a proud participant in the Geico Road Safety Tour that is upcoming. You're going to be going across Florida on a bike?
From Orlando to Tallahassee, 400 miles in 4 days.
I'm tired already. How many people taking part in that, Karen?
There'll be 12 riders. About six of them are from Tallahassee. Dave Farrell, who's a bike policeman, is on the team. We'll be leaving on the 20th, and we will arrive on the steps of the Capitol on the 23rd of this month. And I hope that lots of people show up to ride in with us. And the whole purpose of the tour is to discuss traffic safety issues, drunk driving, texting while driving, distracted driving. So we'll be stopping at the universities and talking to the students and other people about those types of things. There'll be testimonials of people who are affected by distracted drivers, and should be great trip. I can hardly wait.
well, let's just hope that everyone that you encounter who's in a vehicle, you know, maintains that, you know, that statutory 3-foot distance there. A lot of folks, I don't think, have gotten the word on that yet.
I think there's more than you think. I ride to work every day, and I, you know, don't have a whole lot of problems. I think people who disobey that law have other issues besides they don't know the law.
More likely than not. Let's start with you, Commissioner Mustian. This whole idea of the Moving Tallahassee Cars Optional, give us a little bit of background. How did this thing get started?
Well, I mean, it's kind of been a long time in coming. I mean, I think we at the City Commission and other local leaders realize that as the community continues to grow, and I think it will, there's only so many areas that we cars can go in. And so we really, if we're going to think for the future, we really got to think of some other options. You know, is it transit? Is it bikes? Is it pedestrian? Or even something more exotic than that. So and particularly in the downtown and areas closer to downtown where we have the densities to make some of that stuff work, I think those are the areas that we're really trying to focus on.
Now, there had been, I think, in addition to – well, we saw the Gaines Street revitalization, which did not include bike lanes, for one thing,
right.
And that kind of engendered a little bit of controversy on that. But that really hasn't seemed to have affected the vehicular traffic pattern all that much. I remember the horror stories being projected before the city got started on that, that that would just bring that major arterial to a screeching halt and it would mess up the downtown traffic pattern. I don't think that's happened.
No, I mean, I've been a little surprised by it, actually. I mean, we were worried about, because it carried, Gaines Street carried at four lanes a lot of traffic per day. And so, you know, and it's pretty much permanently shrunk to two lanes now. And I, you know, we haven't seen a whole big ton of problems with it.
Okay. But Tennessee Street is still sort of a work in progress, or at least a plan in progress. Gabe Menendez, what's the deal there? What is the plan for Tennessee Street if the city commission signs off on it and it's a go?
The plan would be to take the outside curb lanes and make them into a shared bike bus lane, as well as allow the right turners in and out of the businesses to operate out of that lane. It is a DOT facility, Florida Department of Transportation facility, and we do need to get their approval on it. And we are trying to work in partnership with them to try and get this thing established.
Okay, but there also is some input, I think, from the folks who have properties along that arterial, right? That they're giving some input in some cases, you know, some pretty negative input, right?
We've heard input on both sides of the aisle, meaning that some people in favor, some people against. It's a change, and it is very difficult sometimes to accept change, especially when it's as significant as this type of change is. We've done the analysis. We've done the evaluation of the existing traffic volumes, of the projected traffic volumes. We came up with this concept for a pilot program, and I have to emphasize that it is a pilot program, because the DOT has plans to resurface Tennessee Street in 2014. So we have a limited window of opportunity here to evaluate this program to see if it's something that we want to consider for a permanent installation at that time that they resurface it. And that's the concept right now. It is a way to move a lot of people. And with the establishment of the multimodal district in 2009,
yes,
I believe, Cherie, mm-hmm. In 2009, the establishment of the multimodal district, the idea of that district is to move more people and not necessarily in the traditional way of a car. And the reason for that is we simply cannot afford to add more asphalt to accommodate those cars. It's pretty basic, especially in these built out areas. So that's where the genesis of the plan comes from. Is we're looking at how do we deal with it today, and how do we deal with it in the future.
Okay, and Sheree, I want to talk about that that multimodal plan there. But first, from a cyclist viewpoint, Karen, is this a good idea?
My opinion on the Tennessee Street project is that it's more about buses than it is about bikes. I think that bikes riding in between the buses is not that big a deal. It wouldn't scare me at all. I think it's very important to put as many people on the bus moving up and down Tennessee as we can get. I have actually gotten in my car a couple times in the last couple of weeks and driven down Tennessee Street, and the buses are already in that lane. And there's very few cars riding through in that lane now. We're just talking about putting some paint on the street, saying, okay, let's just make this a rule where the cars who are going straight through go to the left. That's where the fast cars go. The people that are turning get in the right lane. So from our point of view as cyclists, we'll be happy to have that because we'll be able to go in the front entrances of some businesses. I have absolutely no fear of riding with a bus behind a bus. I do it every day. You know, so we just really don't understand the opposition to this. It's already happening from what we can tell. It'll just be permanent or for the pilot. There'll be paint on the street. So we don't understand what the big deal is.
Well, there had been some objections, I know, even to the Capitol Circle widening project, you know, with or without bike lanes on the part of some folks, particularly the Northeast Business Association, because they were kind of high and dry for an extended period of time while that widening was going on. And there may be some of that lingering fear among the merchants along the Tennessee Street corridor that, my gosh, you know, people are not going to be able to get in and out of our establishments and our business will collapse.
You mean while they're paving? While they're painting it or after they get it painted? Not many people are actually parking in front of those businesses anyway. I mean, a lot of the people that are going those businesses are walking or parking a mile away and walking in now. Most of them have four or five parking spots in front. And there's nothing going to stop anybody from pulling in there. They're just going to have to look in that lane, make sure there's not a bus or a bicycle in the way when they turn, you know.
Oh, it might be part of that, you know, we fear change. Sheree, you wanted to pop in there.
Well, let me start off with one thing. I wanted to let everyone know, and this is a good time to do so. The commission is going to be voting on this on March 14th. So it's going to be pushed back to the first one of the meetings in March. So I know you'd mentioned February 22nd at first. The first thing, there are several reasons that we're entering into the overall multimodal planning itself, and Gabe talked about the financial realities of it. Really, that's what's driving it as more than anything right now is a lot of the financial realities of just seeing that we can't spend the $8 million per lane mile to build roads, and that's about what we're looking at. Every mile, every lane, for each lane, it's about $8 million, and that doesn't count for acquisition of the property. The Tennessee Street specifically, the biggest thing that brought it to the forefront so early was the issue of safety and the number of pedestrian and cyclist accidents that have occurred on that corridor between Ocala and Monroe Street. If you think about the road, it's already four lanes west of Ocala and east of Monroe. So this is a six-lane section that was really intended to be four lanes but then was restriped in the 1980s for six lanes, so that cars could actually – the ones that are turning in and out of the businesses were not slowing the through traffic going through. There is additional room on the road. There's actually some capacity, which means there's room for, you know, additional traffic on the road. And that's why we see so many speeding issues. And the speeding problems have resulted in a number of those accidents. What happened a few years ago is that we were approached – the city was approached by – the Student Government Association at that time to look at some solutions.
Okay. Hold that thought, Sheree. We'll get back to that in just a moment after we take a break here on Perspectives. We're talking about the Moving Tallahassee Cars Optional Plan. Your input welcome to at 414-1234. Yes, we're revving up the conversation here on Perspectives, talking about the Moving Tallahassee Cars Optional Plan, which goes before a Tallahassee City Commission vote now on March 14th. That's a change in date from what we'd said originally, and that is the vote. Next week, the City Commission will have a workshop on this, and it really has to do with the future of transportation in the capital city. If we have to spend $8 million a mile, is that what
per lane?
Isn't it? Per lane.
Yeah.
Per mile. That's a lot of money. And there are other perhaps more cost-effective ways of moving around. We've heard about, of course, the big revamp to Star Metro to try to make that less of a user-unfriendly kind of situation. There's still some tweaks going on there. But we also have bicycles. And, of course, there's always walking. And there's been an emphasis on sidewalks as well. So this isn't just vehicles on wheels. It also can be those of us who still like to do the pedestrian kind of thing, and hopefully Tallahassee will become more amenable to that. Sheree, didn't want to cut you off there before the break, but you were saying as part of this revamp, planned or proposed revamp of West Tennessee Street, that it really is a matter right now of essentially restriping. You're not going to be doing a whole bunch of real work
there. Yeah, and when we first kicked this project off back in the summer, one of the first things we did was to go to every one of the businesses along Tennessee Street. They had a letter with my name and my email on it, and they had somebody they could contact directly. Someone from our staff talked with each person in those along the street who owned one of the businesses or worked in the business. One of the biggest misconceptions we found was that people thought it was going to be like a Gaines Street, where we were actually going to tear up the sidewalks and rebuild everything, and it was going to be a permanent change. And so that's not the case at all. It's simply a matter of painting and signs, because it is a pilot to see how it works. It wouldn't really work just to put cones up, to just do it for a few days and see how it works. You know, that's what some of the people suggested to do since it was a pilot. The reason is because there's about 200 driveways along this stretch, and it'd be very difficult to put cones so that people could still access the driveways. And the last thing we want to do is prohibit access to the businesses. So the goal is really to have this lane to gear it towards the pedestrian, the transit, and allow cyclists to use it, and separate the faster moving traffic from the people on the sidewalk. Right now, the traffic in this section of road is going about 10 to 15 miles over the speed limit, and that results in 3 to 7 times more likelihood of someone's hit to have a fatal injury. So what the proposal to do is to allow the slower moving traffic in that outside lane. The buses, because they're stopping every 1,000 feet or so for a bus stop, they never really get over 15 miles an hour. People going into the businesses, into the right turn lanes, they should be down to about 10 or 15 miles an hour as well. So you're removing the fast-moving traffic from that outside lane and giving a buffer for the pedestrian on the sidewalk. Because the traffic is moving slower, it also makes it a safer place for the cyclists to ride. What we found in other cities is it's usually not the bus that's coming up to pass the cyclist and having to go around them, but it's actually the cyclist is moving faster than the bus because they're going to a particular point, whereas the bus is stopping all along the way.
Hey, Tom, just real quick, and there's a whole lot more to this program besides just Tennessee
Sure.
Street. So but while we're on Tennessee Street, just a couple of things that I think are either misconceptions or just aren't out there in terms of facts. And what I've tried to do on this is try and deal with the facts and not – because everybody drives Tennessee Street, everybody has an anecdotal story, including me. And so I've tried to say, well, let's put all that aside. What are the facts? So the number one fact that I think people don't realize about the proposal is that you can use this lane to make a right turn into the businesses along there. So once you realize that, as Karen says, it's not a whole lot of – it's not a really big change from the way things work now. The other is, and Gabe can speak to this better than I can, but the facts as I understand them is that our analysis of the traffic really does not indicate any negative impact on the traffic by doing this. And again, that's a fact that just seems to sometimes get lost in the discussion. Part of the benefit of doing a pilot program is to be able to check that stuff. You know, does it play out the way that we projected it would? And we'll have an opportunity to do that, I think.
Yeah, and one of the fears, and Gabe, maybe you can talk about this, is that there will be aggressive enforcement on the part of police patrols that if they see me in this lane and I don't make an immediate turn, well, they're going to pull me over and cite me or something.
That certainly is a possibility. If we see a lot of abuse, there's no question. But the lane, if you think about it, the lane is intended to operate very similar to a center left turn lane where you have two-way traffic. There are rules and regulations that basically say you can only travel so far in those lanes before you execute your turn. That same rule would apply for this curb lane.
Okay, but that's the great fear. Why are they telling me where I can drive? I can hear that right now.
Well, but as Sheree said, I think the major impact is that if your idea is you're going to whip around somebody in the right-hand lane at 60 miles an hour, well, you won't be able to do that anymore, and probably shouldn't.
And shouldn't anyway.
Right.
But maybe, Tom, what we might talk about a little bit is just our whole kind of bike effort in Tallahassee, because during my tenure as a commissioner, I've had a little sub-working group that just tries to make things better for bicyclists and tries to get more people to ride. And we were successful a couple of years ago in being designated a bronze-level bike-friendly community, which I'm very proud of. And we're trying to make it to silver status. And kind of the interesting anecdotal story of mine is that almost without exception now, when you see a Star Metro bus, it has a bike on the front of it. And, you know, 3 years ago, you didn't see that. And so we're trying to come up with a system of bike routes, a map that's online and a physical map where you can say, hey, if I want to go somewhere, here's how I could get there easily on my bike. You know, trying to improve safety elements for bikes. We passed out throughout the city the little yellow bumper stickers that say 3 feet, please, just to kind of keep people aware of that. So I think there's a lot that can and should be done there that we're trying to work on.
Yeah, because Karen, what comes first? The bike lanes cause more bicyclists to come out and make use of them, or more bicyclists drive the greater, use of bike lanes?
I think probably a combination of the two of things. I've always said that the more bikes that are on the street, the less accidents will happen because people will become used to dealing with us. That's the way it works in cities where people ride all the time. But on his thought, Capital City Cyclists would really, really like to thank the city of Tallahassee for their vision when it comes to biking and the mobility district and the bike routes. We a couple years ago, came up with some trunk routes and submitted them to the city, and you guys took those and ran with them. And we're really, really excited about getting those routes up and marked and starting to have people ride them. There's probably 20 or 30, maybe 50 regular commuters in Tallahassee that you'll see all over town. I know people see me and recognize me, and I don't even know them, and they come up and say, "Hey, you're that girl that rides up and down Capitol Circle." And yeah. But we're really, really excited about the Franklin Boulevard project. We're happy about Gaines Street because I think we learned a lot from Gaines Street. We're very happy about the mobility district and trying to encourage people to, you know, walk or ride the bus. And we're looking forward to working with you guys. And I think Tallahassee is going to become an urban community very soon. And so we're switching over from rural to urban. And maybe some of our younger people will stick around after they graduate from FSU if we can give them a city that's something they want to live in.
Yeah, Tom, that's a good point Karen brought up, and Commissioner Mushton, too, that this project is a much larger project. The Tennessee Street is sort of the first big implementation step that's being proposed, but the Moving Tallahassee Cars Optional is a much larger planning effort, and the bike route system for the Mobility District is a big piece of that to provide some dedicated north, south, east, west connections that are specifically signed and dedicated for cyclists to use, and most of them running on existing roads, but just giving that visual presence that is intended for cyclists. Then setting up wayfinding so that people can find their way around as pedestrians, identifying which corridors need to have 10-foot sidewalks versus those which need to have 6, so that as things redevelop over time, that there's a continuous look and continuous sidewalk and safe sidewalk access for everyone. And it's also tied to the Star Metro. They're doing an alternatives analysis to look at some longer-term solutions for Tennessee Street and the area around campus, it probably extending beyond Tennessee Street, into the campus. There's a lot of development being proposed on Gaines Street. So they're currently in the process of a one-year review of just some alternatives such as streetcar or something like a bus rapid transit or something like a streetcar with rubber tires, which is often a first step before making the bigger infrastructure investments. So they're all tied to integrated because you have to have a safe sidewalk system to get to a transit stop. And it is really not to say that it's trying to tell people that this is the only way you're going to be able to move in the future. Because Karen and I were talking, a lot of times we have to drive. There are certain trips that it makes sense you just need to drive. But we want to let When we're looking at the future population growth, the demands on our road system that Gabe was talking about, we really have to come up with some alternatives, because we just see as we have increasing population and growth, we will have gridlock on the roads unless we provide some alternatives for people who do have a choice and who want to get to places on a different manner. We need to put that infrastructure in place. For example, in the Tennessee Street area, that so many of the trips, because you're seeing high density student housing within a quarter to a half mile of campus, your 4 and 5 story tall student housing is what we're seeing coming in, and that's a lot of and many of their trips are going to just within a mile radius of mm-hmm. that area, so those would be very reasonably served and perhaps even more easily served by getting there on a bicycle or on transit, because in many cases the businesses don't have enough parking or space for parking to serve them otherwise. So.
Yeah, it makes sense. Gabe Menendez, talking with Ron Garrison over at Star Metro a while back, he was really jumping up and down about the prospect, not today, not next year certainly, but somewhere in the future, of a light rail system, perhaps like the old-fashioned street trolley, which every metropolitan area once had in the U.S., back before World War II particularly, and were terrific before people had cars. Do you see any return to that, possibly, maybe?
If we can reserve the space, I think there's a real possibility of that happening. As Cherie said, the alternative analysis will do an evaluation of that. But we have limited space. And what I mean by that is what you see on Tennessee today is really all the space that we have available, because the businesses are right behind the curbs. They're right behind the sidewalks. So there's not really much potential to widen that economically.
Now, I think one of the big fights you see in Tallahassee in the next 20 to 40 years is the median strips that are all planted and green and everybody likes. That's the area that you would put transit, and that'll be really difficult.
Unless you do like Disney did with the monorail and put it up above the greenery or something like that, and I can imagine what the price tag on that would be.
I'd rather have the transit than another lane of traffic.
Yeah. What do we do about canopy roads? They are still, for better or worse, arterials in this town. You can't put bike lanes on them.
You can build them off. Like on Miccosukee, you could build a lane off, a boardwalk off on the parts that you can't get through. It could be done. It's a matter of money and priority.
Under current regulations and all that, is that possible? Is that
sure.
even doable?
Sure. In fact, on canopy roads, we're more likely to be able to add sidewalks and or bike lanes as opposed to roadways when you think about it. We have a lot more flexibility available to us as designers and as engineers to be able to meander the bike lane and or the sidewalk around the trees as opposed to a roadway.
Right.
It's much more difficult to meander a roadway around trees than it is bikes or multi-use paths.
Yeah, we've seen that happen even along Thomasville Road and out Mahan, where there's been some pretty creative ways of getting around some of those large centennial oak trees and such. And of course, you can't go flying, you know, with your bike, you know, 30 miles an hour down there. You know, that's a pretty tight turn to take, but. 414-1234. We're talking about moving Tallahassee cars optional, the plan that will get a final vote before the Tallahassee City Commission come March 14th. There is a City Commission workshop on it next week. And by the way, there is a website if anyone wants to find out some more about this in greater detail. Cherie, what do they do?
Sure. It's on talgov.com. If you visit talgov.com and then choose the planning department, you'll then see a link to go to the Moving Tallahassee Cars Optional. There's some background on the project. And you can go to the comment section and leave us a comment. That comes into my inbox and another planner in the office, and it will also be incorporated into the record, the public record on this project for the City Commission.
Terrific. Speaking of comment, we got some comment on the phone, courtesy of Tom right here in Tallahassee. Hi, Tom. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
I'm appreciating the program today. It's very relevant to Tallahassee's future. What I wanted to raise was the fact that that we need to be planning more and more aggressively for bike trails and buses and a change in our transportation system, because inevitable things are coming our way. On the very biggest picture, we have the supply of light sweet crude, that's crude oil without a lot of sulfur in it, is beginning to become a lot less available. And a lot of refineries in the world especially along the east coast of the United States, are set up to handle light sweet crude. And without billion-dollar investments, they can't change to process the crudes that are becoming available, even in lesser supply. But they can't do that. And so as a result, some of these refineries are closing. And just to give you a perspective, there's three in the Philadelphia area, the ConocoPhillips at Trainer, Pennsylvania, the Sunoco at Marvin Hook, New Jersey, and the Sunoco at Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, are all scheduled for closing sometime this summer because they're not making a profit between the cost of the crude on the international market and the price of gasoline. They're not making a profit. And in addition, one of the very largest refineries in the Western Hemisphere just closed here about a week ago. That's the Hovensa refinery down in the Virgin Islands, at St. Croix in the Virgin Islands. It produces 500,000 barrels of oil per day of refined products. So in totality, all these refineries that have closed and are scheduled for closing in the imminent future produce somewhere over 1 million barrels of oil a day, and a great proportion of that is used in the East Coast market. So if we think that we've seen the gasoline prices as high as we're going to, or we think they're going to gradually escalate, we haven't seen anything yet. And these are mega-scale situations that aren't avoided by a little bit of finagling at the local level. In other words, we're going to have to live with this bigger reality. And with that, maybe we throw that in discussion and see where that goes.
Boy, that's some terrific input there, Tom. And the fact that we do deal with supply and demand when it comes to fuel, you can either reduce the supply from the producer side, from the wellhead, or you can reduce the supply coming out of the refinery. Either way, it sounds like higher gas prices. And Karen, if we could ask you, how much do you save in gasoline by doing as much biking as you do?
I spend $20 a month on gas.
And we all hate her. You know, you can see just the looks of scorn around the table here. That is incredible. How many bike miles do you log usually in a month?
I put about 150 a week commuting, plus what I do just to ride.
That is a lot of cycling. But it's still, I think for many of us, is still a viable alternative to do maybe a little bit of cycling, more than we certainly do right now. You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM, the Moving Tallahassee Cars Optional Plan. And we'll have more in a moment. Four one four one two three four, the local number for Perspectives, or 800-926-8809, long distance, Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. As we go mobile today, Moving Tallahassee Cars Optional. On the line with us, Justin. Hey, Justin.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey, it's going well. How about you?
I'm doing good. I've been without a car for the last 12 years here.
Way to go, Justin.
Hey, how are you doing? First I wanted to applaud the city for, I was really pleased going to one of the community meetings on Franklin Boulevard and the design they decided upon to move forward with. I think it's really pretty much the best kind of facility they could have put there, and I really wish that would have happened on Gaines Street as well. But one of the other comments I wanted to make was I think the things that are crucial that the city needs to work on is not just focusing on roadways that are, you know, aesthetically pleasing or, like, roadways that are designed for, like, leisurely travel, but, you know, a lot of the people that cycle who use it for transportation here in town are lower-income people or people that really need, you know, students that really need to use their bicycle as transportation. So, some of the avenues that, you know, really need it, like Tennessee Street, if it's more accessible by bike, you know, the university is kind of isolated from, you know, connectivity to the rest of the city. So focusing on that, I think, is very crucial. Very crucial part of the design. And I hope that, you know, that the Tennessee Street project moves forward, and then other projects that make some of the other major roadways more accessible to bicycles.
Okay, and Sheree, wasn't that part of the overall plan as well to try to get connectivity between those various corridors?
Absolutely. Connectivity is the key to making this the whole plan work, to look for connections between the major activity centers. You know, we started out from that very beginning point, looking at Midtown and FSU and FAMU and downtown and TCC, and looking at the ways that we could connect those so that people could get there however it works for them. Going back to the cost effort, and you know, especially relevant for students, not only is it just the gas filling up the tank each year, on average, the American family spends about $9,000 per car per year. So that's a lot of money. I mean, you add it up over the course of 10 years, that's that's a different house you could purchase, or you know, that's different money that could be going to retirement or education. So there is, you know, at the individual level, there's that impact. So I'm glad to see that there are more people using cycling at FSU. I've heard that the bicycle ownership has gone up significantly among students, and one of the reasons was that cost estimate.
Well, one of the other things about on bicycling, I mean, there are different types of bicyclists, and there are some that will ride on the highway, and like Karen, and Thomasville Road is not a problem, and there are others like me that I like to ride, but I wouldn't feel comfortable on Thomasville. And so kind of the other path that we're following is trying to get these multi-use trails that are not on the highway, and with the completion of Cascades Park, I mean, you literally will be able to go from Leon High School to the coast on a multi-use trail,
right,
which is pretty remarkable. And so one thing for our listeners here is the city's trying to, you know, make these connections of that trail system. And so, you know, we only have a certain amount of money, but for people that are interested in that, you know, we'd appreciate their feedback of what are your priorities. If we can only do three connections, what should they be? And there's, you know, we'd like to connect Tom Brown Park. We'd like to connect Overstreet Park. Some of that's easier said than others. But, I mean, it's pretty exciting. One piece real quick is that we have the money. We have it under contract, I think, to do the multi-use trail bridge over the railroad tracks out near Piney Z, which will be really remarkable. So there's some pretty neat stuff going on.
Thank you, Commissioner. That's a good point, because we're looking not just to enhance the bicycle route network here in the multimodal district. That's really just the first step. So connections in from every other place, or connections throughout the county over the following year, we'll be looking at expanding that bike route network, at least the plan for it. So again, you can provide any input regarding connections anywhere in the county, and we'd love to hear it.
Okay, and before we go back to the phones, something you brought up during the break, Commissioner, was in regards to the fact that I think it's what, last year there was a survey taken that put Florida at the bottom of the heap when it came to being pedestrian friendly, particularly Central Florida, which is horrific. You take your life in your hands anytime you step outside your home or apartment in Orange County. How is Tallahassee trying to buck the trend on that?
Well, and Gabe may can speak to this better than I can. And we spent a lot of money and effort in building sidewalks and coming up with the priority list for doing sidewalks. And I think people will be glad to know that we're going to get some sidewalks done pretty soon that have been on the books for 20-plus years. At Loonblaw Road comes to mind. But Gabe might can speak to that more than I can.
Yeah, how do you make us walk better, Gabe? What can you do?
First of all, I need to provide you a surface that you can walk on, so that you're not running in and out of traffic or walking in the ditch. We've done those type of improvements. In recent years, we've attacked areas like the Bond community, where we've covered up a lot of those ditches and provided sidewalks. We also have an initiative with the renaissance of Star Metro through the NOVA program. What we did is we looked at the entire system and identified those areas where we're missing sidewalks. And then what we did is we cross-referenced those areas where we're missing sidewalks and where the new bus routes are proposed. If we can't get the people to the bus stop, we can't enhance the system. Mm-hmm. So we concentrated and prioritized those. And thanks to the leadership of Commissioner Mushin and the rest of the commission, we basically addressed that priority system and have completed a lot of sidewalks and are in the process of completing even more that will allow people to get to the bus route. That what the there's a lot more off the bus route that needs to be done. But with the limited funding that we had, we've addressed those that are just on the bus route. And we're moving forward to that, like I said, to get that connectivity to the transit system.
And I noticed that Leon County has kind of made that a priority too in some areas, like along Buck Lake Road and over in there where they finally got some sidewalks for the first time in history. Calls are just pouring in right now. Let's check out, how about Jim on line two here in Tallahassee. Thanks for hanging on, Jim. Welcome to Perspectives.
Yeah, first a comment. It's great that we're trying to have bike lanes and the paths are good, but a lot of the lanes are, in my estimation, unsafe. I mean, you've got cars within 3 feet of a very small bike lane that in a millisecond can be on a biker by distraction or other things that we all know occur. So bikers are going to continue to get hurt. Even if we have increased awareness, there's distracted driving and a lot of other things that happen. And my question is, why can't we take the right-of-ways that we have with sidewalks and expand them, something like the Site March Trail, maybe not as wide, and use them for bikes? And, of course, if you're worried about pedestrians, a lot of the roads have sidewalks on both sides, so pedestrians could be on the other side and perhaps bikes on the other side. But if we already have the right-of-ways, you'd have the barrier of a curb and a little bit more distance to keep our bikers safe.
Thank you, Jim. Let's get a cyclist perspective here from Karen Lowen. What do you think here?
Statistics show that riding bikes on sidewalks make it way more dangerous for the cyclist because a crossing road is not looking for someone moving at the speed that a bicyclist is. And I'm sure that if you were able to get the crash records in Tallahassee, you would find that a lot of the bike car incidents happen at crossways where bikes are not where they where a car would look for them. And a lot of people I see on bikes who are not educated will be riding the wrong way against traffic on a sidewalk and they get hit there. The problem with separating us, and I think it works in some places, like along Blairstone, there's a nice little path that runs, but there's not a lot of cut-throughs there. The problem is that if you're actually trying to get someplace, like to work, I don't really want a scenic view. I don't want to go on the – I don't want to take the scenic route. I want to get to work. Very rarely do people get hit in a bike lane on a straightaway. And yes, there are distracted drivers, and that's a huge problem, and we should take care of texting and riding. My friend Dave Baton was killed last summer by someone who was not in her car driving. She was doing something else in her car, and she hit him and hit his son and killed him. But that could have been your grandmother at her mailbox that got hit by that person. You could get hit by a distracted driver in your car. That's a problem that has nothing to do with bicyclists. Since I've been riding my bike to work, you develop a whole new skill set of survival tools. I use my ears more than I do my eyes. When I hear a change in the acceleration of a car behind me, I know they're about ready to make a decision to pull in front of me and cut me off in my lane or slow down and let me go by. And it's just a whole nother way of getting from one place to another. And I feel perfectly safe riding in a bike lane. I mean, knock on wood, I don't get hit by somebody who's texting on their phone. But I understand your concern, and I also wanted to tell everybody that May is National Bike Month, and Capital City Cyclists is going to be doing a whole month long full of activities and rides that will try to teach people how to ride to work, ride in traffic. We're going to we're even going as far as to show you how to get your kids to school on bikes. So watch Capital City Cyclists websites. May 1st will be the kickoff. We will be doing rides around town. We'll be doing gallery hops. We'll be doing a Sports Fanatic Sunday where we're going to actually go to a baseball game by bike. Park your bike, walk in the stadium. No parking, no nothing. So, but back to the thing, to your question. I like separated trails where it's appropriate. But I don't have a problem riding in a bike lane at all. And people who learn how to ride, who learn how to drive their bike in the street, don't have those problems.
Let's head back to the phones. Raman, I believe, is the pronunciation here in Tallahassee. Hope I got that right. Hi, Raman. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, Tom. This is actually it's Ramin.
Ramin, sorry about that.
It's
okay.
All good. Well, listen. First of all, I just want to thank you and all the guests and all the callers. It's encouraging. When you see the community coming around such an important topic like this, and you get to see all the ideas and all the passion around it, but one of the points that was made was talking about, you know, one, making campus and the areas around campus in Tallahassee that much more attractive for students, not only students but also for the recent graduates here in Tallahassee. As a recent grad myself, you know, I know that's something that Tallahassee is really subpar in comparison to other cities as far as being pedestrian friendly. And I just wanted to, I know a lot of the conversations around investment and the limitations that we have financially, but has any studies been done on other cities that have invested in this urban transportation and making things more pedestrian friendly? And what is the return on that investment for keeping, you know, young professionals and for us also attracting others to the city, whether it's for the university or just to live in Tallahassee?
Okay, great point, Ramin. Thank you very much. Any data, any research or studies on that? What is the return on investment when it comes to retaining, young, upwardly mobile professionals and stuff?
Karen? There's a group in town called KCCI, and forgive me, it's Knight something something.
Knight Creative Communities Initiative.
Thank you. They are a group of people that are studying ways to retain young professionals. And Tallahassee, they've chosen two projects this year. They're the ones that did the Sustainable Tallahassee and also the adventure races that have been happening around for the last year or so. But this year they have a program called Tallahassee on Two Wheels. And they're helping Capital City Cyclists a lot with a lot of these issues. But they have all that data, and the data shows that pedestrian and bike facilities increase property values, increase incomes of people who live here. You can get it all, and their website, I'm sure, has all the stats on it.
And just to add to what Karen said, we're working on that data locally. We don't have the local data just yet, but nationally, yes, we've definitely seen those trends. I mean, certain walkable areas, I've seen reports that people will pay $4,000 to $34,000 more for a home in a walkable area, and they'll pay, and there's a higher proportion or a higher rates that they'll pay if they do have the option to get somewhere with and live without a car. So we suspect that that would be the case here in Tallahassee too. And so especially with these changes that we're putting forth in certain areas of the city, we'll be monitoring how that affects over the property values over time.
Okay, well, let's see if we can get some input on that here in the few moments we have remaining here from John. I think he can provide us with an analogous experience elsewhere. You still there, John? Oh, John is gone. Okay, he was going to talk about the bike riding experience he had in Portland, Oregon, right, which I think has had perhaps they've gotten a little bit further ahead of us here in Tallahassee when it comes to such things as being bike friendly and that sort of thing. And we kind of know what's been going on in Portland. They haven't been doing too shabby when it comes right to retaining young urban professionals and attracting, you know, large businesses and that sort of thing. Is that kind of what you're seeing, Commissioner? Part of the rationale for all this too?
Well, I think so. I mean, and part of it is just, you know, realistic long-term thinking and planning. I mean, how are we going to, you know, some of the projections show another 100,000 people here in the next 30 or 40 years. I mean, how are they going to get around? I mean, just adding cars to Tennessee Street isn't going to work. So we've got to come up with some other solutions, and that's what we're working on.
Okay, and from your perspective here, Gabe, you're not going to be able to just have total access to new right of ways to put roads and streets.
It's a fact. I mean, a lot of the areas now that we're seeing a lot of the growth through infill such as in the multimodal district, when you start infilling, those areas are already built out, and any widening of the pavement, which requires property and more property to do, you're purchasing improved properties. It's much easier to go out into the rural area in terms of buying the property for pavement. In the urban area, it's much more expensive and much more complicated.
Folks, it's been a great discussion. I wish we could continue it, but the music means we're just about out of here. Thanks very much to Gabe Menendez, City Public Works Director, City Commissioner Mark Muschin, Sheree Bryant with the Tallahassee-Leon County Planning Department, and Karen Lowen with Capital City Cyclists. Thanks all for coming in here on Perspectives, which is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox, Michael Fleming on the phones and emails. And I'm Tom Flanagan. We're taking a week off next week for Pledge Drive. We'll be back in 2 weeks with your input and more expert opinion right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.